from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Ron Unz, the entrepreneur and Republican political activist who initiated the 1998 state proposition to abolish bilingual education in California, is now running for the United States Senate. Acknowledging his late entry into the race and slim chance of winning, he says his motivation is to have a platform to prevent Proposition 227 from being repeated by voters this November, repealed this November. As part of Forum's election 2016 coverage, we want to talk to Ron Unz about his candidacy in this segment, also about bilingual education and why he supports a cause not typically associated with Republicans, raising the minimum wage as well as other issues. Good to have you with us. Welcome.
Great to be here.
And actually, maybe to the surprise of many others, a supporter of Bernie Sanders.
Oh, well, compared to the other choices.
Yeah. Well, look, we could talk about that in the course of things here, but I want to talk first about it's still 1998, you had 61% of Californians voting in favor of abolishing bilingual education. Now there is an attempt to, as I said, not only repeal it, but move more toward what they call bilingual dual education. And this is anathema to you, obviously. This is something that you're very strongly opposed to. Is this the only reason you're running for governor, mainly?
Well, it's what prompted me to get into the U.S. Senate race. I mean,
You ran for governor once before. Exactly. You're running for Senate now, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, please.
Well, I mean, it was basically I really was very unhappy a couple of years ago when the state legislature, including the Republicans and the Democrats, decided to try to repeal Prop 227, English for the Children, and reinstitute the system of Spanish almost only so-called bilingual education in the public schools. It was a disastrous system 20 years ago. The current system where children are taught English as soon as they start school has been working very well for the last 15 or 20 years, and I think we should keep it.
Well, there is that sense of dual language immersion. For example, in the South Bronx, they've done it with, they claim, some success. There was a Stanford study that says students who have it do better in middle school. We just toss that away or not disacknowledge it?
Well, Prop 227 didn't outlaw all bilingual programs. For example, the number of students in dual immersion programs in California has grown quite a bit since the passage of 227, and we don't have any problem with that. What ends up happening is that children's parents have to sign a special waiver to have their children placed in a non-English-speaking, non-English-oriented classroom. And the problem is many of the immigrant parents don't want to sign the waiver because they want their children taught English as soon as they start school. That has crimped the activities of some of these bilingual activists. So they want to repeal 227 so that they can stick children in non-English classrooms without their parents' permission. And that's wrong.
The repeal is called English for the Children, and the legislative ballot will come up presumably in November. It does have support from Republicans, too, some Republicans.
Unfortunately, the majority of the Republicans, the overwhelming majority of the Republicans in the key education committee voted to repeal Prop 227 and put bilingual back in California. And that's what made me so annoyed that I considered entering this race. In other words, the politicians in Sacramento are out of touch with the voters. The vast majority of immigrants, non-immigrants, Latinos, Anglos are very happy with the current system. And the test scores of over a million immigrant children have risen dramatically in the years since we shifted away from bilingual education.
Talking to Ron Unz, who is running for the U.S. Senate seat that Barbara Boxer is retiring from, took you $700,000 of your own money back when 227 passed, of a $1.2 million that was raised. It's a lot cheaper to run for political office and get this kind of platform, yeah?
Well, that's certainly true. And also, if you don't really think that there's a huge chance that you'll win. I mean, the truth is, no Republican has won a U.S. Senate race in California in 28 years. The Republican Party is at a very low ebb.
On the other hand, you have somebody like Dan Schneer who says that your entry into this may fragment the vote for Republicans even more, make it more likely that you'll have a runoff between Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez, Democrats.
At the time I entered the race, the two Republicans were each tied at 3% in the polls. So it's not like I was disrupting a very powerful Republican bloc. And the truth is, the most recent poll shows me in first place among the Republicans. So I think given the fact that I'm not a longtime party functionary and I have views on a lot of issues that I think could attract people from across the ideological spectrum, I think I have a better chance of getting to the general election than either of the other Republicans.
Let's talk about some of those other views of yours. I mean, you become so identified with opposition of bilingual education that they called 227 the UNS initiative, and opposition was known as No One UNS in its title. I don't think anybody in the state of California is more identified with an initiative other than maybe Howard Jarvis, so you have that distinction, even more than Ward Connerly. But and by the way, Frank Bruni describes my guest, Ron UNS, as a George Plimpton meets Pee Wee Herman. How do you respond to that kind of description or characterization?
Well, look, I'm not a politician. I'm somebody who's really been very focused on policy issues over the years. I've been a political activist. I've organized campaigns both in California and around the country. And I'm not somebody who basically spends his time normally running for office.
Including minimum wage, which, again, is usually not associated with GOP candidates.
Oh, I feel very strongly. In fact, the truth is, a lot of people may not realize that, but I actually played a very significant role in moving the minimum wage, the issue of raising the minimum wage to a much higher level, to the centerpiece of the national debate. Basically, 5 years ago, I wrote a major article arguing that so many of our social and economic problems could be solved by raising the national minimum wage to $12 an hour. It was picked up by James Galbraith, a prominent liberal economist. It was picked up by Ralph Nader. It was picked up by the late Alex Coburn. And gradually, it moved to the centerpiece of the Democratic Party. And I'm very glad about that. One thing I'll say is that if in the difficult circumstances where I'm elected the Republican senator from California, I certainly will make raising the national minimum wage to $12 an hour one of the centerpieces of my political activities in D.C.
Well, you mentioned Ralph Nader. You're also on board with him or have been on board with him to get tuition free from Harvard and those applying to Harvard and Harvard admissions changes that would be quite significant. And is this part of what put you in the Bernie Sanders camp? I mean, he's in favor of pretty much abolishing tuition entirely.
Right. I mean, it's difficult to implement his proposal because it would obviously take a huge tax increase across the country, which is difficult to get through Republican Congress. What we're focusing on is something actually much easier. Harvard has a $38 billion endowment. It's a hedge fund with a little college attached off to one side. Harvard each year gets 25 times more money from its investment income, stocks, bonds, mortgage derivatives, than they get from college tuition. Therefore, we think Harvard should immediately abolish all undergraduate tuition. If Harvard abolished tuition, all these other wealthy elite schools like Yale, Stanford, Princeton would follow suit, and that would put tremendous pressure on the public colleges and universities like the UC system, UCLA, and Berkeley to drastically cut their tuition fees, which I think should be reduced by at least 30-40%. I mean, it's ridiculous. In the mid-1970s, annual tuition at UCLA and Berkeley was $630 a year. Now it's $15,000. That's outrageous. I think these UC campuses have to cut their administration, they have to cut their costs, and they have to drastically reduce the tuition they charge students.
We're talking with Ron UNS, who is a Republican candidate for the United States Senate here in California. And since we're talking about Harvard, in fact, you're an alumnus of not only Harvard but Stanford and of Cambridge. Is your IQ almost as high as that proposition? That's on your resume. I mean, up there with Einstein above 200?
Well, you've got to understand. When tests are taken by a young child, there are a lot of fluctuations involved. So, you have to take things like that with a grain of salt.
Well, you're a theoretical physicist by training, yeah. And you've made your money mainly in software and innovations and so forth, and have come out on a lot of public policy issues, including some that have engendered a good deal of controversy. As long as we're talking about the Harvard admissions thing, Anti-Defamation League, and I know you're Jewish, but the Anti-Defamation League was certainly unhappy when you were stating things about Jews getting perhaps some kind of preference as far as white people as opposed to, say, Asian Americans?
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually wrote a 30,000-word article about 2 or 3 years ago analyzing the corrupt admission system at Harvard and the other Ivy League schools. And there were really a lot of things in that article that, a lot of researchers previously hadn't focused on. And it received certainly some controversy, but a lot of praise from some very prominent researchers. For example, David Brooks in the New York Times ranked it as possibly the best article published that year in any magazine in the United States. It won very, you know, good praise from
Where did it appear?
Oh, in the New York Times.
It was in the New York Times. That's an op-ed, you mean.
His column in the New York Times.
No, I mean your article.
Oh, my article. Oh, it appeared, it was a cover story in the American Conservative, of which I was a publisher. And, you know, again, 30,000 words long, very large article. And, in fact, Nathan Glaser, who's sort of the, you know, the grand old man of ethnic sociology, was very impressed by it and, you know, said some very nice things in his review of my book. Same thing with Steven Pinker. Same thing with a lot of experts on admissions policies. And, you know, again, the article is very long, very controversial. It focused on all sorts of different issues. And, in fact, it sparked a symposium in the New York Times on the statistical evidence I found for an Asian quota in the Ivy League. In other words, it's really shocking. When you look at, for example, Ivy League admissions for Asian students, Asian American students, the Asian American population in the United States has doubled, more than doubled in the last 25 years. The number of Asian Americans enrolled at those elite schools is exactly the same as it was. In other words, there's tremendous statistical evidence for an Asian quota in the Ivy League. And it's obviously denied by all the administrators, just like they always used to falsely deny the existence of a Jewish quota in the 1920s.
But this now means, in your judgment, preferential attitude toward Jewish admissions?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, it is one thing I pointed out, which is really quite interesting, is that, you know, in the last 20 or 25 years, there's been a tremendous, tremendous drop in apparent Jewish American academic achievement. And in fact, that got a lot of attention among some leading Jewish scholars who were shocked by the data I found. I mean, it's, for example, when I was, you know, in high school or the beginning of college, many times these national competitions had 30 or 40% of the top students being Jewish. Now it's down to 5 or 10%. And, you know, it's not clear why there's been such a drop in academic achievement among Jewish students in the United States, but the evidence seems there. And, you know, it's one of these things where a lot of people sometimes don't notice these facts because they don't look at the data. I went back and looked at the data and opened a lot of eyes on the issue.
I'll talk with you about other issues, but let's get back to English only, since that's, you know, the main motivation in many respects, as you've said candidly about your candidacy. Is it fair to use a taxpayer-funded election for an important seat to push a separate agenda?
Well, I don't know if it's a separate agenda. I mean, the whole issue of whether a million or 2 million students in California should be taught English or not English when they go to school is an important one. It's even more important on the federal level. We're talking about millions of immigrant students in our schools who in some cases are not properly taught to read or write or even speak English when they go to school.
Forgive me, this is another thing that separates you from many other Republicans. You are in favor of essentially supporting, helping immigrants.
Oh, I'm very pro-immigrant. I mean, the truth is, you know, the reason the Republican Party destroyed itself in California was because under Pete Wilson, 20, 25 years ago, it became very sharply anti-immigrant.
It's 187.
Exactly, 187. Now, you know, I actually challenged Wilson for renomination in the Republican primary because I was so enraged of what he was doing regarding immigration. And I was one of the top featured speakers in that gigantic 70,000-person march in Los Angeles against Prop 187. So I've always been very pro-immigrant. I've written tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of words on the subject over the years. But, you know, immigrants need to be, their children need to be taught English when they go to school. And that's what they want. And that's why it's so ridiculous that the state is trying to move backwards on English in the schools. In other words, the whole issue of bilingual education in California has been dead and forgotten for a dozen years. Everybody's happy with the current system. Everybody's happy the children are being taught English when they go to school. They're doing fine. They're learning English. And it's ridiculous for the state of California to now think of going back to Spanish almost only classes in the public schools.
Talking to Ron Unz, he is running for the U.S. Senate as a Republican, and you can join us on this program. In fact, we invite you to do that now. If you have questions for him or comments from what you've heard, certainly like to hear from you. Let me give you the toll-free number. It's 866-733-6788. 586, and you can call us now from wherever you're listening or however, radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Number again to join us, 866-733-6786. Or, of course, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And particularly like to hear from some of you who want to weigh in about bilingual education. Are you happy with it? It has been certainly not a major issue for a number of years now, as Ron Ann said. Happy with the way things are going? Or is it time to perhaps reconsider it, as certainly the legislature here in California seems to be aiming toward? I want to ask you about one other thing. You gave a rather significant grant, about $600,000, to a guy named Jeffrey Cochran, who is professor, University of Utah, evolutionary biologist. You're on record as saying that's why you support him. But this is a guy who's got kind of a cuckoo notion that gays are gays because of a gay germ. Is any of that money going to be going toward that kind of research? Or?
Well, I mean, again, you know, that's a perfectly legitimate evolutionary theory to develop. I mean, he's a very good evolutionary biologist, but he's wrong on that issue. And in fact, he's a very right-wing guy and sometimes, you know, not the easiest guy to deal with. So that actually I wrote a column debunking his gay germ theory. And he was so enraged by that, he banned me from his own website, even though I'd given him a large grant. Now, the truth is, even though he's difficult to deal with and he's very right-wing and has criticized very many of my articles on immigration, he's also a brilliant evolutionary biologist. And he and a few colleagues came up with what I think is one of the most important evolutionary theory breakthroughs in the last 20 or 30 years, accelerationism. And in fact, that's the reason I gave him the grant. And, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance it'll be worth a Nobel Prize down the road.
Again, our guest is Ron Unz. We're inviting your involvement in this program. And I don't know, you don't think, let's talk for just a moment before we go to our callers about some other issues, since you said, bring a caller on here who wants to talk about climate change.
Sure.
Linda, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I've been quite impressed with what I'm hearing. I'm actually a Green Party voter, and I still have been quite impressed. And what I'm curious about is your position on climate change and what California and the U.S. Senate as well can do about climate change.
Okay, I'll have to admit my position there may be fairly controversial. I've never investigated global warming in detail. But, you know, I really am skeptical of the science behind it, again, as somebody who doesn't really focus on it. And, for example, the late Alex Coburn, who was very much of one of the most prominent radical journalists in America, was actually the one who persuaded me that global warming and climate change might really have much less basis behind it than I'd assumed. And I've written a column about it.
And are you a climate change denier then? Would you classify yourself as one?
I wouldn't classify myself that way, but let's just say I'm a skeptic. In other words, I haven't looked at it. There seem to be arguments on both sides. And the fact that, you know, somebody, one of America's leading left-wing radical journalists, was so persuaded that the evidence was against it was something that really made me doubted a lot more than I had before. And I've written a column about it. So I'm not an expert. I haven't looked into it. Maybe I would look into it down the road. But as of right now, I just don't know what the truth is.
Here's Susan, who comments now that a lot of research has shown that bilingual children are smarter than monolingual children, and that bilingualism postpones Alzheimer's. Do you regret destroying bilingual education in California?
Not at all. It really, these were exactly the same arguments that were made almost 20 years ago during the campaign. I didn't believe them now. And when you look at what happened, within a couple of years after the passage of 227, the largest controlled experiment in the history of American education, over 1 million immigrant children were switched from the bilingual programs to intensive English immersion. Their academic test scores increased by 30%, 50%, in some cases almost 100% in just a few years. It was on the front page of the New York Times. The results were that good. The founding president of the California Association of Bilingual Educators became a born-again convert to English immersion and one of the leading promoters of English all around the country. He wrote for the New York Times. He wrote for the Washington Post. He was on the PBS NewsHour. He said he'd been wrong for 20 or 30 years. Bilingual education doesn't work. English immersion does work. And as the founding president of the California Association of Bilingual Educators, I think he would know better than a lot of other people.
However, I alluded before to a Stanford study, which I'm sure you're familiar with, that says that children who have bilingual education do better in middle school than children who don't.
I mean, a lot of that is nonsense. In other words, you know, the truth is all the research funded by the pro-bilingual groups has always said bilingual education is good. All the research funded by the anti-bilingual groups has always said bilingual education is a failure. But the proof of the pudding is in the eating. The test scores of over a million immigrant students rose at a dramatic rate once they were shifted to English immersion. And the results were so dramatic, it made the front page of the New York Times. All the major newspapers in California had opposed our initiative when it was on the ballot. But once the change took place, they sent reporters into all of these different schools to see what was happening, and they all came back with glowing reports. The teachers were happy, the students were happy, the parents were happy, the children were absorbing English at an incredibly high rate, and that's exactly what happened with all the previous immigrant groups in American society, and that's why take a look at Latinos today in California. Last year, it was announced that the number of Latinos in the UC system had surpassed the number of Anglos for the first time, had reached a record high. I think one reason Latinos are doing so much better in college admissions in the UC system is because now they're being taught how to read and write and speak English at a very young age.
Still the highest number of dropouts, though, in California are Latinos.
Well,
high school dropouts.
Yeah, they come from a working poor immigrant background. I mean, the truth is, if you come from a poor family, you're always going to be in a more difficult situation in the public schools. But they're doing much better than they were doing 15 or 20 years ago.
Bring more callers on. Let me go to Patricia. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. My name is Patricia, and I am a bilingual person who has a kid in a dual immersion school in Berkeley, and my blood pressure went up the more I hear this man who doesn't know that whether or not he wants to believe it or not or admit it, a lot of the population doesn't speak English, they speak Spanish, and in my school, the school that my son goes to, half the parents are American white people who want their children to speak Spanish and English and be proficient in both languages because they know their children will have more opportunities. The children still absorb English perfectly fine, but they instead, the difference is these children will be fully bilingual at a very young age, and they will have, like the rest of the world, another language instead of like the typical monolingual American who cannot speak any other language when they go out of the country, they're like completely lost.
Yeah, but Patricia, thank you for bringing that up. In fact, there's an old joke that somebody, three languages is trilingual, two languages bilingual, one language is an American. But she has a point here. If you immerse them, all students bilingual, you have the advantage of American students not being monolingual.
Well, I think her example really proves my point. Prop 227 did not totally outlaw bilingual education in California. Her children in a dual immersion program, it sounds like they're doing fine there, and that's fine. In other words, it's permitted by the initiative. The difference was she had to sign a waiver to have her children placed in the program. And what the politicians in Sacramento are trying to do is set up a system, as we had in the old days, where immigrant children could be placed in these non-English classes without their parents' permission, and that's wrong.
Let me thank Patricia for the call, and let me talk with you, since you're running for Senate, a little bit about foreign affairs. You have a position on ISIS, for example?
Well, I mean, the truth is, the Middle East now is in a very bad situation, and it's primarily because of our disastrous Iraq war. In other words, what we did was start a chain of events that really has destroyed the Middle East, destroyed stability, led to the rise of massive terrorist groups, and the first step I think we have to really
take. Were you always opposed to the Iraq War?
Absolutely. I was utterly opposed to the Iraq War. And my old friend Bill Odom, the three-star general who ran the National Security Agency for Ronald Reagan, described the Iraq War as the greatest strategic disaster in American history. And I agree with him 100%. The first step we have to do is to take all the Republican and the Democratic policy advisors who supported the Iraq War, who caused this disaster, and moved them away from all influence in foreign policy. The same people behind the Iraq War are running the Democratic Party and running the Republican Party foreign policy right now. They caused this gigantic disaster, and they still are in charge of our foreign policy. They have to be removed from all influence.
Unlike Trump, I think you said you haven't changed your views in 10 or 20 years. There was a time when Donald Trump was pro-choice. Now he's pro-life. You can go down the list. In fact, he was a Democrat, in fact. Let me go to a caller in Weston, Virginia. Andrew, you're on the air with us. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Frankly, my question is quite simple. After hearing your guest speak, I mean, to me it seems overwhelmingly, at least on social issues, that he at least is in line with what many would consider to be liberal ideas or, you know, those of the Democratic Party. I'm just curious as to why he continues after 20 or so years to label himself a Republican when it would seem, just from listening, obviously besides the climate change thing, which he says he's not quite sure yet, why he continues to label himself a conservative.
Well, you know, I'm not big on labels. In other words, if somebody wants to call me a conservative, that's fine. If somebody wants to say I'm not really a true conservative, that's fine also. For example, I'm very much opposed to affirmative action. I've been opposed to it for 40 years. I grew up in a liberal democratic family background, and the whole reason I became a Republican under Ronald Reagan was as opposition to affirmative action. And unfortunately, the Republican Party has run away from it. So, you know, on a lot of issues, I'm more on one side, a lot of issues, I'm more on the other side. I'll just tell you where I stand on all these issues. One thing I will say is over the last 10 or 15 years, especially under the Bush administration, I certainly gave serious thought to leaving the Republican Party. But on the things I disliked most about the Republican Party, the Democrats tended to agree with them. So why should I become a Democrat? When they supported the Iraq War, when they supported the financial bailouts on Wall Street, when they supported all these policies I didn't like either.
Let me thank Andrew for his call. And here's Ben who says, how does your guest plan to get around the natural attack that his ideas are xenophobic in less than three sentences, please?
Well, I'm very pro-immigrant. I think immigrants want their children taught English when they go to school. They're overwhelmingly in favor of these English immersion classes, and that's the whole reason they're trying to repeal our initiative, so they can stick immigrant children in non-English classes without their parents' permission, and that's wrong.
Ron Unz is running for the United States Senate as a Republican. Thank you so much for joining us on Forum this morning.
Great to be here.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. We have another hour coming up. CBS correspondent and longtime 60 Minutes newswoman, Leslie Stahl will join us in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. She's written a book about being a grandmother, and we'll talk about that as well. And you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And you can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our general manager is Joanne Wallace. And for all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio,